Todd here. My name is Martin Johnson. I'm a county chief of staff in the fire department. For the last week, I have been part of unified command for incidents on Saturday afternoon. I can feel your concern because during this time, my wife was evacuated, so I know how you feel. So hopefully we can alleviate your concerns tonight. In the interest of time, I'm not going to make all the introductions. We have several dignitaries here, and I apologize for not introducing you, but I think we'd like to introduce what we're here for. To start off, I'd like to introduce Mike Dietrich from Incident Management Team 5.
Good evening, folks. I apologize for not being able to find my way around Pasadena. I apologize. Thank you very much. I'd like to say that it's been a pleasure to be the incident commander on this incident. It's been a very trying assignment for all of us. We know that the conditions have been trying for citizens, firefighters, and especially my brothers and the L.A. County Fire Department as well. What I'd like to do is go through the current status, where we are right now, and what the strategy is for our future, where that works for you. First of all, this fire is currently 147,418. The fire has grown substantially since the beginning. This is the largest fire in the Angeles National Forest history. So it's very significant. We're currently at 38% containment. That's an excellent figure, given the conditions. When you look at one of our fire maps, we always look at the black line. This area, black up to the north, towards the Acton area. This is all tied in over to here, and the fire crews are currently working here right now. This is carrying the front hill and the foothill areas. Okay, here we go. This area along the foothill country is in pretty good shape. It's black all the way up into this curve in here, so the front country is very secure right now, and it's looking really good, and I'm very pleased with the efforts that have gone on there. Today there are over 53 miles of fire line that have been built, and it's literally been a firefight for every foot of this fire based on the weather conditions that we've all been experiencing, the single-digit relative humidities, and the extreme fuel conditions within the forest. So the firefighting efforts have been spectacular, considering the topography and fuel conditions that we've been working in. Let's see, with regard to strategy on the fire, we always focus on the highest priority values being human life, number one. After that, we're looking at the properties associated with that. This area has been a very high priority, this area. And currently, our very high priority area is trying to tie it off to the west. The crews only have about 1.5 to 2 miles to go in Pacoima Canyon, very steep, highly dissected area. And we moved in a couple of extra hotshot crews, and I think we have 8 or 10 crews in there. We're going to be working today and probably through the night to try to pinch that off and essentially button off the back door here. So that means that this whole piece in the next several days will be contained. And the projection is to focus our efforts up into the Angeles National Forest, up towards the San Gabriel Wilderness area, keeping it above and far away from the foothill communities, Pasadena, and further on to the East Arcadia, Sierra Madre, and further foothill communities up towards the Susa. We are trying to keep it up as high as we can in this area. Crews have been making excellent progress in here. We've not been able to fly as much aircraft as we would like because of smoke conditions. When we are able to get in and work these areas with helicopters, we can. Today that was an advantage to us, but the fact that the smoke was down, fire behavior was also down as well because the smoke kind of kept the sun from heating up the fuels and making any major flare-ups. As soon as we are able to get in with aircraft into these areas, we will do that and tie it up into the east fork, excuse me, west fork of the San Gabriel River and tie it up over into Highway 39 area. I'm going to zap you here, but up to the Highway 39 area, Highway 2, and keep it within the confines of the forest. That's going to be no small task because, again, it's a wilderness area for a very good reason. The topography, again, is very steep up Evangelist Crest Highway down towards Highway 39 and so on. So the firefighting efforts, I believe, have been spectacular. We've had tremendous support, both financially and with like the resources, the firefighting assets that we have out there. We currently have over, like I said, 4,800 firefighters, 20 helicopters, and 8 air tankers, excluding the use of the, in addition to that, we also have the use of the DC-10s, 2 of them, super supers, and also 747, all of which we will bring to bear at any point in time as long as we can fly and get those assets in there. With regard to the future, someone asked me if we're turning the corner. I consider this a huge success, the fact that we're able to do this and accomplish this with very minimal structural loss. And I know that it's awful for folks to lose their homes. I really do experience or have sympathized and have experienced this firsthand along many others with regard to other folks that have lost their homes, and not just here but other parts of the country as well. So that's a terrible feeling, and it's an awful feeling when that happens. With regard to our prognosis again, trying to keep it up into this area, I'm guardedly optimistic. We haven't turned the corner, but I think we can see it. And we'll be after this fire continually until it is contained. The threat that we experience over in here is once we have it, and I'm convinced that we will keep it somewhere in this in the wilderness area, is the fact that we've not had Santa Ana winds. That Santa Ana wind season is just around the country, or around the corner. It's the only experience here in Southern California. So our intent is to keep this fire and mop it up and do the best that we can to prevent the probability of the fire coming back out between now and whatever the rains are. And I don't know when that will be, if it's late October or early November or so on. So it's, we're going to be with this, and the forest will be this with this for the long haul. There's no such thing as letting up on this fire. The conditions are very treacherous. That we have out there, firefighters are in, like I said, extremely steep terrain. The relative humidities are down, and dehydration is probably one of our most serious issues that we've had to deal with safety-wise. We had one person that went apneic or stopped breathing out on the fire line. She was revived, essentially, and is resting currently in the hospital as we speak. In addition, several firefighters were transported today to a local hospital working up in this northeast corner. Apparently, got exposed into some kind of a dump or hazardous material situation and breathed some really bad, nasty stuff. And again, were transported to the hospital. Several have been released. I don't know their fate, or not their fate, their what their current status is as we speak right now. But as soon as we get that. We believe that they'll be in good shape, and we'll get that out to folks. That's not going to be a fact. Just a couple more things. Come down the hill. It's going to be great. Apparent fractured femur. It turned out to be negative, but we've had excellent medical support with the hoist capabilities. The person was sent out last night to a local hospital. I think it's at the hospital within the last 2 hours. So considering the terrain they're operating in, like up in this area, that's good. The weather pattern for the future remains unchanged. relatively the same level of temperatures, same level of relative humidities, so I'm not expecting any rain in the near future. Let me ask Jody if I can read a statement. Yeah, let's Supervisor Norton lead the statement on the cause of determination of this flare. We have a long way to go. We have truly appreciated the communities, not just of Pasadena, but with the spirits of the folks in La Cañada, with their sent to Tujunga, and around to the north, and in the big Tujunga area, and so on. We are trying, like I said, to keep the fire as high from and away from these communities as we can, and that is our highest effort. The last thing, the work around Mount Wilson has been very good early on in the fire. I wasn't sure when the fire, if the fire would get there. I thought it was just a matter of when. We applied a lot of retardants along the ridges to keep the fire behavior down, and that occurred. We were able to insert ground-based apparatus, compressed air foam systems, retardant, firefighters, hot shot crews, and currently have experienced very minimal damage around that site, if any. And that, to me, is a very high, to me, it's a level of metrics. With that, we'll continue with fighting this fire with relentless effort. Our firefighter spirits are good right now. They want to go to work and do the best they can for you. And you know, it's just a teamwork effort. It's not just the firefighters. It's the partnerships with the communities, also the elected officials, and private utility companies like Edison and so on. We're all working together. I think that if there's one message that I have, is that we are all working together, side by side, meeting the interests of the county, the local fire departments, Pasadena, as we work through this. And, I've been extremely impressed with the work with the Sheriff's Department, the evacuations. I know it's been difficult for folks, and sometimes the communication isn't always there, but we strive to make it the best that we can. With regard to all the evacuations work, essentially our field commanders on the ground determine if there is a need. A joint decision is made, it gets relayed to the Sheriff's Department, and it gets distributed. It's not... it doesn't take a long time. We need to evacuate the area. We do it. Hopefully, we coordinate that successfully. It's evacuation to person very quickly. With that, I want to say thank you for the privilege of being able to be the incident commander with all of you out there for the Forest Service and with my partners.
Mike, can I ask a question?
With that, I want to say thank you, and I'll turn back over to Adam.
Thank you, Mike. One thing we'll do is we'll hold all the questions that we're done, and if you have a question, you can ask the appropriate speaker. Our goal here tonight is your time's valuable, so we can get out of here in an hour, so for everybody. Next, I'd like to introduce from the LA County Sheriff's Office, Commander Lopez.
Evening, and thank you very much for the invitation. I'm the incident commander from the law enforcement side of the station fire incident. Well, currently, the department remains fully mobilized and committed to continuing to support the fire effort and all the needs of the community, regardless of where they are in around Los Angeles County. We have four platoons deployed at this time, four field force platoons, essentially 50 personnel each. They are doing, we're pre-staging locations in the event of an evacuation, and we're continuing to provide high visibility patrol in the areas where the evacuation has been lifted. A lot of the people who are returning to their homes have not had an opportunity to do so. We're making sure that the homes and residents remain safe. We're in full cooperation with our brothers and sisters on the fire service side. Chief Dietrich and his team have just done a phenomenal job and assisted in our needs. Currently, we operate on a 12-hour operational period. On the night side, we plan for day shift operations. Day shift operations plans for night. I don't know if you had an opportunity. I was on the phone just before I took the podium on the other side, and I spoke to Sheriff Bach, who's unavailable to come. And he said, Jimmy, just make sure to tell them that he remains committed as the sheriff to provide for any resource necessary or available with the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. Is available at my command to deploy to ensure public safety. He said, he knows that we're coming to some of the areas of concern, particularly up there in the Bear Divide area and along the foothill cities. He says, don't worry about lines on the map, Jimmy. He says, whatever you need, just get it done. If you need the resources, then call them to your command. Tomorrow we're meeting with members of the law enforcement agencies along the foothill corridor to ensure that we are in face-to-face communications regarding their resources, their potential needs, evacuation plans, what we can do to assist should that become necessary. And again, as I mentioned in one of the other community meetings, I want everybody to keep in mind that, as you can see, that all of us in the law enforcement and fire service are wearing black bands over our badges. It bears stark reminder to the deadliness and lethality of this fire and potential. So we'll do. I know there's, as the Chief Teacher alluded to, there's been some communications or concerns regarding evacuations. And essentially, what we do is we provide trigger points, because we know with the fire service, it's distance. With us, as far as evacuations, it's time. How much time do we have before we initiate an evacuation? Before we have trigger points, if it reaches a specific point or a street or a ridge or an area, we have voluntary evacuation protocols in order. We have already pre-thought that hours or days ahead of time. And then when it reaches another point, then it's mandatory evacuation. Again, we have personnel standing by and forward deployed in your areas. We believe the fire's been closed way before the decision is made to initiate those evacuations. And again, we apologize for some of the confusion, and as you can imagine, in an evolving emergency, those things happen. However, as I've mentioned before also, that if I'm going to be a little cautious about our evacuations, that's a criticism I can take. That one I'll stand up to. I'd rather be a little bit early and a little bit bigger than necessary than late and not enough. So we'll hold on to all questions, and I'll turn it back over. That's what happened. I think most people here realize that if you live in the communities of Sierra Madre, Arcadia, Monrovia, or Pasadena, that you don't have sheriff services. Okay, and we understand that, but representatives from your city, as well as myself, have been meeting on a daily basis at the command post with the sheriff's department. And our goal there has been that we're going to try to send one message, okay? And we realize that all of our communities are interspersed with unincorporated areas or areas of the sheriff's service, okay? So our goal is that if we say, we're going to use this street as the evacuation, it doesn't matter if you live in a county section or you live in the Pasadena section, that you get one. Our goal is one message. So just be reassured that we've been having these communications every day. The sheriff's department, as well as all of our police departments, have been great, and we are prepared if the need arises to evacuate you. Okay, next, I'd like to introduce the Forest Service Supervisor, is Jody Norton.
Well, good evening, and thank you for inviting us to share this information with you this evening. The good news is we're hoping that you folks are not impacted at all, really, by this fire. That is our objective, as Mike said, is to try to keep this fire tied into the wilderness and the West Fork as soon as we can, away from all of the rest of the foothill communities to the east. I don't have to tell you guys what an absolute disaster that would be for us to get this fire down. Been there, done that. With the Kirby Williams fire, how many of y'all remember that? 11 miles of fire line along the foothill. Not fun. We don't want to go there. One thing I do want to let you folks know, because I know we're short on time and we want to get to questions, that's the big thing here, is we... This may have already come out in the press, but after a forensic examination of the point of origin of the station fire, arson investigators from the U.S. Forest Service and the Los Angeles County Fire Department and the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department have concluded that the station fire was the result of an act of arson. So with that said, folks, with the loss of the two firefighters from LA County, it is now a homicide investigation. Okay? So it is a joint investigation. This fire is all about, it started all about teamwork, and it's going to end all about teamwork. It's a joint investigation between the U.S. Forest Service, a law enforcement investigations unit, and the LA County Sheriff. So, you know the drill. That's all the information we have. As soon as we get more information, we'll be sure and let you folks know, okay? And I believe there will probably be a press release coming out if it hasn't already, so you'll start to see that all over the news. Going on the point that, like I said, really hoping that you folks are not really impacted by this fire, I do think it's important that as citizens of the area that we understand what the impact of this fire is. Mike mentioned that this is the largest fire in the history of the Angeles National Forest. That would be going in recorded history since we've been counting fires. The Angeles was that, or let's put it this way, the San Gabriel Mountains were actually set aside as a public land base in 1892 under the Timberland Reserve Act. So since 1892, this is the largest fire in recorded history within the San Gabriel Mountains. To give you a flat, 145,000 acres? To give you a feel, before today, the biggest fire in San Gabriel Mountains was the Ravina fire in, I think, 1919. Some of you may be historians, and if I get it wrong, correct me. And that was 75,000 acres. And Mike says it was up in the Soledad area, And I think it's way up there, too, if it isn't the biggest in the history of Los Angeles County. I think we're looking at that today, too, Los Angeles County in total. So pretty history in the making here. The other thing I want to point out to you is that this fire has impacted all three ranger districts on the Angeles National Forest. That means it has impacted all three watersheds, that significant watershed that feed the LA Basin. As you all know, the San Gabriel Mountains is the headwaters for the San Gabriel River watershed, the Los Angeles River watershed, as well as the Santa Clara Mojave River watershed. And if you can look on the map and get a feel for where it is, it's a significant portion, especially if we push it into the wilderness and the most eastern point of the fire, the big San Gabriel Canyon, catching it up somewhere in the Sheep Mountain wilderness on that escarpment. It's a huge hunk of the whole southern part of the Angeles National Forest. Now, why is that significant? Well, we're going to order up, and I know some of you have been through this drill before. We have on order what's called a burned area emergency rehab team. It's a federal team made up of a whole swath of about every ologist you can think of, soil scientists, geologists, biologists, archaeologists, all of them, engineers. And what they're going to do is it's going to be the biggest bear team I've ever worked with in my career. They're going to go out and they're going to assess every acre of this fire. And what they're going to do is they're going to tell us where did the fire actually burn, what burned, how intensely did it burn, and what did it do to the vegetation in the soil. Did it completely nuke it and there's nothing left, not even a seed source? Did it create what's called a hydrophobic condition in the soils? What does that mean, hydrophobic? Aversion to water. It's similar to, it means the fire burned so hot that it literally melted down the chemicals or the molecules in the soil and create a hard pan. It's kind of like when you wax your car and then you throw water on it, it beads up and just runs off. Hydrophobic soil, that's what happens. So when we do get the rains, it means that the water will not absorb into the soil and it's all going to run off really fast. Now, eventually that soil, something will break through those hydrophobic soils, and then what happens, the water gets under it, and you get huge sheets of soil. Those are called debris flows and mud flows. So that's the thing that we need to look at with this burned area, is how intensely did it burn in these three significant watersheds that feed the LA Basin. San Gabriel watershed, I think, is going to be the least impacted. The LA River watershed, it's the whole watershed on the National Forest land that's been impacted. And then a large chunk of the San Gabriel, or the Santa Clara Mojave River watershed as well. That means that we're concerned about the town packed in and everything else that's on that north side of the forest. So anyways, we're going to bring a team in here. The key word is there, is emergency. That means fast. So as quickly as we can, we're going to assess what the damage is as a result of this fire. And then what they're going to do is give us recommendations, not only the Forest Service, but you can just imagine the number of entities and communities and all that wrap in almost clear around the forest like that, that we need to work with. This team will tell us and give us recommendations for what we need to do to try to secure the hillside to mitigate or minimize the impact to the downstream values. All right? What's the downstream values?
Us.
And our stuff. All of our stuff. So once again, everything that's within that wildland-urban interface is going to be at risk. So when we get the recommendations from the BEAR team, we'll group up with everybody, figure out what we need to do, and once again, we'll have to have a really, really good communication plan if we end up having to do evacuation and go through that whole drill again. I have no idea what the weather predictions are going to be. Your old guess is as good as mine. But the reason why I'm taking the time to tell you all this is because hopefully you all are going to be spared from having to really kind of worry about this in terms of impacting you and your stuff. But all of the communities to the west of you and all the way around, they're not going to have a fun winter. And I think that's something in the community that we need to think about. Those of you that were involved in the Kirkland Williams fire in particular, you know how that went and you know what I'm talking about. You know, in addition to this fire, we did have the Morris Fire as well. The Morris Fire was in San Gabriel Canyon. San Gabriel Canyon sits above Azusa. So does the Wilderness, which is where we think we're going to try and catch this fire. So we are going to have another public meeting tomorrow night that will capture the cities over to the east, because we know they're nervous as well. So we may have some issues that we need to deal with the city of Azusa, because they're right in the direct line of that canyon. So again, same thing, get the BEAR team in there, figure out what we need to do. So I guess, I just wanted to impart on you folks, this is history in the making. And as the forest supervisor of this national forest, life is not going to be the same as we have known it. I do not know what the long-term effects of this fire are going to be, but it is definitely history in the making. And we very, very much need to work with the local communities and have a connection with you folks, because these are your public lands. All we are caretakers for your public lands. The other thing that I just want you to think about too, now this does impact you, is that all that, you know, there's a lot of stuff inside that red area. A lot of stuff that belongs to you. All the campgrounds, all the picnic areas, all the trailheads, all the trails, all the special places that people like to go and recreate on this forest. Recreation is by far the largest program we have on this forest. We're one of the most recreated national forests in the entire country. Maybe the smallest one, or close to the smallest one land base wise, but boy, the people sure do come. I have no idea what the loss is. It's been too hot to get in there. What the loss is in terms of the recreation facilities on our forest in that burned area. So y'all need to know, the forest is closed right now. This chunk of the forest, it's going to have to be closed for a while till we can figure out what the loss is. And probably going to be more likely going to need to stay closed until we can get through this first season of rains. Because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me to go in and spend our, your, my, I pay taxes too, hard-earned taxpayers' dollars to go in there and try to fix a bunch of stuff when it might just get washed back down again with the winter rains. So that's another thing that I think is really important for folks to understand that live in this community and love this national forest, is that it ain't going to be the same for a while, and maybe for a long while. The other thing, just to let you folks know, because our employees live in the communities too, we did have losses in the Forest Service with our stuff that helps us take care of your forest. We lost an entire fire station compound, the Mill Creek Fire Station compound, got totally nuked. So that's the fire station, the bays, the barracks, everything that's up there is just gone. We also lost a number of Forest Service residences. Those are houses where our employees live. So right now, I think we figured they're all in Mike's district, what, 12? Right now we have 12 employees and their families that have no place to live. Granted, they were living in the government houses and barracks, but all their stuff is gone. So we're dealing with that. So and then in LA County, they had lost too. Besides losing two of their employees, two really brave firefighters, Camp 16 up around Mount Gleason, gone, nuked, total. So the county has a loss on the administrative facilities as well. So I just wanted to point that out to you guys too. Not to be real doom and gloom, and I know it's probably coming across like that, but again, I just think it's really important for folks to understand what the significance of this fire is. Now I'm going to go back to where I started. We determine it's an arson fire. I don't know if we find the person that started it. I don't know about you guys. What are people thinking when they start fires? I don't know. Anyway, I think I'm going to stop there because I know you guys have a lot of really good questions that we need to hear. And we actually learn a lot from your questions because it helps gauge as to how are we doing, are we communicating, all that stuff. So we really do appreciate the questions that you guys ask. There's no such thing as a bad question or a dumb question or anything like that. So Marty, I'm going to turn this back over to you and let you... Oh, I am so sorry, Mike. With us tonight is Mike McIntyre. Hey, hi. For those of you that don't know, District Ranger Extraordinaire. He's the District Ranger for the LA River Ranger District. And pretty much all of the district that he manages just burned up. So, anyway, for those of you that don't know Mike, and if you have anything to do with the LA River District and all that, you'll be working a lot with Mike. So, with that, I'll shut up, turn it back over to Marty, and let's get your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Jody. Real quick, can we get a show of hands? I want to try to figure out where people are from. If you're from Pasadena, can you raise your hand? Sir Madre? Devastated forest. It looks good for us in the foothills, in my opinion. Okay, so I feel comfortable right now as a representative of the city of Pasadena. You know, the fire is still burning up there. I'm not saying that, but I feel comfortable for all the residents across the foothills. So what I like to do is I'd like to have people all step up. I'll take questions, please, one at a time, and get to as many questions as possible. You get to go first because you got your hand. Okay, and if you could just identify your question. We will have whoever you ask the question, they will repeat the question, make sure that everybody can hear it, and we'll try to get to the next questions.
Mike, management resources, time and effort, and priority has been put in with those communities that are all now in black. It's fantastic, I think, and I certainly understand it. I'd like to have a feel for what kind of priority and resources are going to be put into the West Fork, say, Kansas, Washington, and maybe Kansas.
Other questions? Century Flats area, folks have said that, well, we're not going to fight fire here. That's not correct. I don't want to get that right out of the table right now. That's a very extreme, treacherous area, as we all know, in terms of fuels and topography and the position of the residences and whatnot. We understand the significance of that. Our best actions that we can take in the Chantry area is the actions up above and around that to keep the fire up on the hill. That's where I'm focusing our efforts the best that we can to keep the fire from there. With regard to firefighting efforts in there, that fire behavior is low, fire behavior that is safe to work in the Chantry and some of the other the areas around there, we will get in and do that.
Louder.
If the fire gets up into the crowns and starts running, where it becomes an unsafe condition, we can't guarantee that we're going to keep firefighters in there. My task, I think, from all of us as a firefighter, public safety, and that is my highest priority, is what motivates me. I had my firefighters killed in an arson fire as well in Esperanza, and that's not going to happen again. That is right in my heart with my fellow compadres with Los Angeles County. That's what motivates me, so we appreciate that understanding. There's no guarantees. We are putting a massive effort to keep the fire up above and out of Chantry.
How about flying many of the big jumbo guys? Are we going to be able to fly into the
projection? The question is with regard to the really big aircraft, Super, and then 747 that carries 20,000 gallons. We will use those as appropriate. The fact that they're so big, that does not mean that they can necessarily get down into the canyons where they can be most effective, or that would be most effective. We found that the best tool is in those steeper terrain is a more or less pinpoint accuracy with the sky crane type of helicopters. Heavy helicopters, we have retardant capability. They can, instead of dipping water, they can apply retardant. They have a portable retardant plant set up. So those are the most effective in the foothills. The large aircraft, if you can get in because of the smoke, are more effective up on the long runs, long ridges, higher up. We've done that. We've had the first drop of the 747 on National Forest System land on the ridge system up in the Santa Clara Ridge system up in here. The first drop of federal ownership. So we will bring all the aircraft there. And it's still, what puts the fire out, in addition to the aircraft, is our boots on the ground, our firefighters. Without the boots on the ground, the fire's not going to go out. So it's a combination. You never base your strategy and tactics on the aircraft being available, because they might not be because of smoke and mechanical and so on. So we have that every air asset available, and we'll use those as appropriate.
I spent the last couple of days dealing with my employees at Foster Homes, and as you know, I got two employees up there, and I don't want that list to grow, so that's the main focus of us on the ambulance.
Mr. Taker, let me follow up on the question. You say, actions speak louder than words. You say you're going to defend Chantry Flats, standing in the canyon, yet you go over to Monrovia and you cut a fire break to Monrovia Spark up to Monrovia Peak, and you leave the old established fire bridge being Newcomb's Ridge and Santa Anita Ridge and try to catch the rest of the water. You're not going to leave this. How can you say you're really, you are going to protect it, you're not doing anything.
I need to look at the map with you later on in the evening to look at those specific areas, and so I can work with our folks to find out what's going on exactly.
Those are the classic fireworks that protect that canyon. How did you do it?
I'll be glad to look with you. I'll be glad to look.
That doesn't make sense.
Let me take that on just a little bit. We've got fire within and the forest area that you're referring to, I believe, is right up in this area.
Louder, please.
The fire area that I believe you're referring to is up in here.
I'm talking about Zimmer's Ridge.
It runs right here. It runs right here. So you got this is break, and you got this is right here.
Point out Chantry Flat.
Well, Chantry Flat is sitting right here.
We are working aircraft up in this area, up on top. They are fighting fire, but will be prepared to fight fire up in this area. And then we do plan to put the bullets in there. We also have to look at the contingencies of where this may end up. And it could end up down here, again, over here. We're working both sides.
What kind of
flight frame
are we looking at?
Okay, please raise your hand to answer questions. We want people to call it out. But you raise your hand, we'll try to get as many questions as possible. Can you get the paper, Mr. Everett, sir?
What is the part of the eastern boundary of the containment line?
What is the eastern of the planned boundary?
No, on the handout we have here on the south side, you have the southeast corner of the containment line. Roughly, what is it? Mr. Lindley, Double Drive?
Zero.
Can we give a thing? What is it?
This map doesn't describe it.
That's fine. My point.
The eastern, the southeast perimeter, which is a brick system up the top, we know that. We're trying to tie it into the Red Box, Red Cod Road, and there's a series of ridges in that area that we're working at.
I'm
not sure of the exact location. I would be glad to get with my operations people to get the geographic descriptions for you tonight.
And each night we had to go out and get in our cars and ride the wheels to see if, okay, is that Lincoln, is that Lake, is that, at a lake, to find out exactly where it is. It was an idea of what it is that's happening with the fire. It was an idea about when we can expect maybe a knock on the door.
The question is, much timing. And the location of the fire relative to the
information is because no matter what community you're in, we all know the north and south and the east and west are we know that it is at the head of Lake Creek, it's the head of Baldwin, or where it is, and we know what we're working.
It doesn't matter if it's 5 minutes.
If we know where it is, then it's moving south
Providing real-time information is extremely difficult. For us, at the command level.
There are people that are assigned to do this.
There are people that are assigned to be monitoring the fire, and they're in communication with my operations personnel out on the ground.
If they could let the news media know, and the news media could just a little blurb that says,
Let me look into what we can do to improve the communication on the fire location of the communities, and I'll make that commitment. Okay, go ahead. Questions?
Okay, I have a question of clarification and then something to add to what it says. Because I understand that what I see is green on that map is what is 144,000 acres?
That was as of.
Okay.
Sometime this morning.
But from the fire, extend for tens of miles. It's not to the head of the lake or the head of Michelin. It's all the way over towards San Diego.
Right.
It is not in any one of those places you're talking about. It's the whole forest. So they can't tell you it's at the top of the lake, it's at the top of the lake, it's at the top of all of them.
The question is with regard to both backfiring, who makes a decision, and how does that occur? First, the decision, there's a difference between backfire and burnout. Backfire is a strategic decision that's being made at high levels. And if I were to describe the potential for a backfire operation several weeks ahead with planning, it would be up in the San Gabriel Canyon area and along Highway 2, where the potential is to backfire to contain the fire. With regard to burning out, these are extremely steep hills. The opportunities to go direct on them, in some cases, based on the fire conditions and the potential to coordinate trying to keep the fire out of the areas, looking at the big picture to get as much containment as it can. Decision is made out on the ground. It's a standard firefighting tactic. And the success, I believe, of much of where the fire is at right now along these foothill communities is a result of direct burnout operations and coordination and communication. It's sometimes difficult to do that. On the other hand, we're looking at trying to get as much containment as quickly as we can to get people, other people, back into their homes as quickly as possible. And the decision to burn out is standard. We understand about the comment was with regard to potential for people to be killed, her neighbor was killed. Remember, there was a result of the fire itself, whatever the cause was, flood afterwards. And the flood afterwards, but it was initially the fire that was not caused by us, that caused by us that started that process, and it's a very difficult situation, and we understand that.
When
the fire might come towards the northern part of Sierra Madre, I am not going to speculate on that. Our intent is to keep the fire as high up the hill and away from Sierra Madre than we can. The weather's in our favor right now.
But we see things on the internet, and we're talking maybe 3 to 4 days.
You know, this fire is a sleeping dog right now. It has a lot of potential. All we need is a couple more days of weather turnaround. Single digit relative humidities, 100 plus degree temperatures, and the fire can do about what it wants when it wants, and it's not a matter that we're in control. We were not in control of this fire. The fire burned over 70,000 acres in 2 days at its own, creating its own weather. Our intent is to keep the fire behavior down, to pound it with retardant, as we say, keep it from getting up enough speed so that it does not impact the communities, whether it's 2 days out, 4 days out. I can't predict that. I don't think anyone else can. But we need to plan
for the event that it does, and then have the trigger points in place to respond accordingly.
Thank you,
John. Thank you, Dallas.
Thank you, sir. Once again, thank you for your good job. You guys don't get enough credit for it. You've been up against like
no sense. Is this the biggest time we've ever had?
Now, as far as the media, thank you for your coverage, but stop staring us residents in Sierra Madre. KFWB has been on the radio saying Sierra Madre strength. We had a fire there last year. There's not much that can burn. Yes, it's up high. We're trusting the professionals to do their jobs. Let them do their jobs. That's why we have you folks.
To the Sierra Madre fire from last year, I think it was June or so.
Yes, sir.
April. But with regard to that particular fire, that Sierra Madre fire is part of the.
It's
also a business. I'm going to rely on Chief Johnson of the media status to deal with our health domain here. Our number one priority is, of course, public safety. We have a medical emergency going on here, so please be patient with us.
Howard?
Just give it a few minutes and
Again, I've been in the fire since noon on last Saturday. We'll get that answer for you tonight. Okay? Come meet with me afterwards and answer questions. I'm going to assume, and we know that you really shouldn't do that, based on that the Glendale School District was closed up until yesterday, that if our school district was closed, they would have made that public, would have been on the TV or something. And likewise. So I don't have those answers. We can find out.
I don't know if this is going to help or not. The Angeles National Forest, because that's the only thing that I have jurisdiction over, so I can't speak for county parks or city parks or anything like that. But the Angeles National Forest, the southern part of the forest, that southern hunk from the 14 over to the 15, it is closed right now. And it will remain closed through the Labor Day weekend for obvious reasons. That includes San Gabriel Canyon, the towns of Mount Baldy and Wrightwood, the businesses will be open, but the southern chunk of the forest is closed. Now, the up where Pyramid Lake is, and that area of the forest that a lot of people call a Saugus area, that part of the forest is open. And this is going to stay closed until further notice, depending on what happens with this fire. So I don't know if that helps you or not.
And if it doesn't answer your question, and there's something that, I'll speak for the city of Pasadena, that we're not going to help you get that information, we'll let us know, and we'll fix it. Okay, we're all the way right there.
There's going to be a lot of questions about timing and when, so maybe keep in mind Is there a general rule when voluntary evacuations are ordered, how much time you have to show them up?
We're going to answer this one in a unified command. The question is there a general amount of timing ahead of time with regard to pre-notification, if you will, of evacuation being imminent? We generally strive for a 12-hour notification to the Sheriff's Department, puts us on alert with the potential to go into a mandatory evacuation, or excuse me, a voluntary evacuation. We work with the Sheriff's Department to establish that time. We try to shoot for a minimum of 12 hours. Sometimes the fire dictates those evacuation requests maybe a little bit with a little bit potentially less notice, but the majority of the time we shoot to take as much lead time as we can, and the decision to go to a mandatory evacuation, I'll let the sheriff speak to that, but if we believe that that fire is moving into the community or towards the community and within the next 2 hours, then we believe that is an immediate threat, and we can't always guarantee that based on how the fire behaves or misbehaves. Sheriff?
Obviously, it's a great question, and it's one that we've gotten a lot. It's not so much, where the fire is, but where is it going to be, and to the extent that it's going to impact me. Obviously, it is for us, it's a factor of time. We check with our fire operations, and we to try to determine where the fire is going to be coming into. What greater an area at least is for residences that are going to be impacted. Do these residences, are they older construction, new construction? Are they that would require mandatory evacuations? There's other animals, the ingress and egress routes. There's so many things that we consider. Even the time, if it's 12 hours, if that 12-hour time period is going to be at nighttime, generally most of the people are at home. During the daytime, some of these people, you don't all live in or work in the same area that you live in. In order to evacuate, you're going to have to come back home to evacuate. Your children are already in school, your pets or animals, et cetera, your valuables are at home. So that is also a factor. We can't just block the roads because you need to get back into your community in order to evacuate your community. One of the things, I had someone to tell me this a long time ago, and they said one of the best readiness or safety notices we get is from, or preparedness advice we get is from a flight attendant. And what do they tell you? When those masks come down from the ceiling, what do? You put yours on first. You have to make sure that you prepare your own families first, and that way you will be better prepared to evacuate should that order come. Okay, again, 12 hours depends upon fire behavior. We will give you as much time as we can when we know that we have to evacuate an area.
Following just on that, we want, after an evacuation, my intent and the sheriff's intent is to get folks back into their homes as soon as possible. We're not going to wait and dilly-dally around for no fires, no smokes, because you folks out there are our eyes in the area. We want to get you back into the new normal if you go after evacuation. If there's no power lines down, that type of stuff, we've got to keep back in. If there's infrastructure, public safety issues, it might take a little bit longer, but our intent is to get everybody back in as quick as possible.
One last comment, if I can. And obviously, my planning staff is working with all the agencies border the foothill communities to make sure that we do face-to-face meetings with their emergency preparedness staff so that we can be really prepared or deploy personnel to assist any community with the evacuation.
Well, first of all, I want to, of course, really commend the firefighters.
Thank you.
But there's something that I just don't understand that keeps me awake at night, you could say. And that is that, according to the 10-year, and I worked with some strategy implementation plan, which is a law, when a fire in the forest first begins, it's supposed to be attacked very, very aggressively. But what I can't understand is how the fire went from
I believe it was 30 acres down to 20, and then it just got totally out of control. And I wonder if you're going to be aggressive for the wildlife and, you know, the forest itself and Ventana Wilderness once you kind of take care of this problem.
Ventana?
A wilderness area.
A
wilderness area. Sorry.
Okay. With regard to the firefighting efforts that went on, I haven't confessed this yet to Mike, but I listened to the initial attack from the ambulance frequency set up at my house in Azusa and monitored it. My understanding is that the firefighting efforts were very good the first day. They made great progress. The fire didn't necessarily shrink, it just became adapted and was smaller. The fire did cross.
And
I'll let Mike finish it off, but the fire did cross and got into some extremely inaccessible terrain, difficulty to put firefighters in. Essentially, the power of the fuel, wind, or fuel, low relative humidities, and high temperatures just overwhelmed the power of the aircraft to get in there. And sometimes it happens, and don't like that when it happens, but this is such treacherous conditions, unparalleled by the danger. Ranger McCloskey.
I was there the first day of the afternoon. I got there about an hour after it started, and the crews were fighting it. There were two flags. One flag was LA County firefighters, and the other flag was the Forest Service. And it was above, it started, it was from the Crest Highway going up. And if you know, over by CCC Ridge, we were watching across at the fire. And we were watching firefighters try to close up rocky slopes like this to get to the head of it to fight it. And one thing about it is the same time the Morris fire was going. Our fire was 20 acres. We had a couple of helicopters. We had hand crews and everything. And they were getting the line around it. When it got dark, the helicopters had to go away. I got a call. I left at 6:30. Everything seemed to be going good. And I got a call at 1 o'clock in the morning from my division chief saying, we have to start the paperwork process, which means the fire got out of the initial attack scenario. What had happened, the weather changed. It flooded below the Crest Highway where we couldn't send people down for safety. And then, as Mike said, it just started to go, and it, you know, it moved faster than the resources we have. I watched for it back, and we did fight that fire aggressively. And it got to the point where we thought, you know, the weather was good for the night, that it would have been easy to just put up next day. But it was, you know, we heard this question at an earlier meeting, and I can say for sure that there was no complacency when it came to this fire, because we knew if it got down below the Crest Highway, it would have been bigger.
And are you going to protect the wilderness area? It's like I don't know what, you know, things can do. Are you going to be aggressive with to protect the wilderness area?
I think that's it. My
turn to last. Protect the wilderness area.
The best way to protect the wilderness areas is sometimes to look at these larger boundaries of the fire protection of the wilderness areas. If you can't get firefighters into areas that are trying to walk up essentially hills that I can touch, I'm standing here, I can touch the side of the hill. That's treacherous conditions. The firefighters can't escape. We just can't get in there to do it, and we'll give it the opportunity if the fire behavior is down to get in there, but otherwise I can't put firefighters in some of those areas. And these ecosystems that we're in are fire adapted ecosystems. They will come back at some point in time following the natural succession processes, and sometimes that is just the way that it happens in the wilderness.
My question will be quick. First, I want to say thank you very much. You guys have done fantastic. So I'll never get thanked enough. You know, our resources are limited locally. When we do declare a state of emergency, we have a whole opening of other resources. What is your protocol to be able to call in for that state of emergency in order to call in those extra resources?
Well, California is very well exercised in disaster management.
think about this. Day two, we had two, or the first day there were maybe 200-300 firefighters on it. Day three, there were 800. Day four, I believe it was 1,800 firefighters, and currently up to 4,800 firefighters. So we can mobilize people very rapidly, and we have brought in people, not just up and down California, but we brought folks in from the Western United States, and also if we need to reach into the pockets, we'll go out to our folks on the East Coast and other countries if needed.
My question, which is, how does, in this case, in this fire, you know, how long it took to get that state of emergency, and does it help to call that in earlier, given how fast it's spread?
We had all the assets ordered prior to the state of emergency. We knew this fire was going to get big. I didn't have to wait for that. We did not have to wait for a piece of paper to say state of emergency. We knew that, and the resources and the systems in place in the state are fabulous to move local government resources, to move CAL FIRE resources, to move Forest Service resources. Not an issue with state of emergency possibly bringing in resources through it. We had the authority, and they were ordered. It just took a little bit of time to get some folks here, and we're glad that the governor did declare a state of emergency and the local government served as well.
Just to add on to what Mike said, we sent a lot of our resources to that fire immediately, but all of our resources from the Foothill Cities are all back in quarters and ready to go. So we are, we are where we need to be right now. And like you said, we have the best availability of resources in the state, and we do this all the time, and we work well together. We see different agencies. It doesn't matter what color uniform you wear. It doesn't matter where you're from. We work well together. So with that, I thank you for coming. Hopefully you have some